Welcome to members of the committee, board members of the NCDC, and to the executive management. From the board members, I've got seven apologies, all indicating prior commitments. But we are told Professor Allison is here, Gilwell is here, and Mr. Andile Mbeki is parking his car. He's within the vicinity of Parliament. And we've had confirmation from Mr. Becky Kumalo, but I don't know where he is. Might be that he's still on his way or something, but I think we should start. We do have the executive management here, so welcome to all of you, including Mr. Mpofu. I think today we want to start with the strategic plan of the corporation. I've asked the management to be as focused and as brief as possible, not to be too long-winded, but to get to the core elements of the strategy for the coming year. And then Mr. Nicholson will take us through the finances and also answer some of the questions that were raised over the last few days, particularly questions by Mr. Hill and one or two other people. We have also received additional correspondence. If you remember, on Friday, we indicated that Mr. Mbeki had withdrawn or retracted his submission to us. He has subsequently indicated that he had withdrawn his first document. He sent us two documents, and after the two documents, his message came that I'm recalling my document. He said he's recalling the first document and not the second document, but the message wasn't clear. So we are tabling his document. That's part of the discussion. But those documents are strictly linked to the inquiry. So I don't want to reopen any matter of the inquiry. The inquiry is closed. The report is finalized. But because it has a bearing on financial issues, I will circulate his document. And we also then received a very, very late submission from Ms. Nadia Bulbulia, which I thought we will also circulate, but it's not linked to the inquiry because the deadline is long past and gone. We had also asked for the company's travel policy document that has been copied and it will be circulated. And I see Mr. Mamponi has also prepared a document relating to the allegations made by the labor union. You know, that's a very thick document. I've just received it now, so I haven't had a chance to look at it. But I'm sure when he talks, he will take us through some of those issues also. So, and there's also the music policy, the SABC music policy document that is being circulated. So with those few introductory comments, I'd like to then hand over to you to the acting group CEO, Mr. Mamponi.
And members of the portfolio committee, given what has happened over the past two or three sessions that we had with the portfolio committee of communications, I thought probably one is just to spend a few seconds just outlining the issues around the public broadcaster and just set the scene so that it would be easier for us to actually go into those presentations. After a decade at the SABC, this is the first time we've been drawn so much attention to ourselves with good reason. I've worked under three CEOs, three boards, some with good reasoning and great leadership skills. I've observed good ideas going to waste and brilliant ideas wrongly implemented, with great ideas being ignored. I stand here today, or sit here today, representing the dreams and good wishes from my co-workers. SABC has men and women who are good, honest, hard workers. These are the people who make sure that each morning, when you switch on your TV, Vuyo Mbuli and Liana Manos are there presenting Morning Live without a doubt. The guys and girls who brought you the Confederation's Cup live in your living rooms, whose efforts and professionalism were fully recognized by FIFA and the broadcasting world at large. I'm representing a team who makes sure that daily soaps are on screen. Generations Isidingo, Siyavedalan, Muvango, and many more are on schedule without fail. These are the people who get SABC to work. Crisis or no crisis, irrespective of good or bad leadership. I've been one of them for more than a decade. This gives me a good firm ground to stand on and pronounce that we know what we are talking about here. Like any other family, we have our fair share of rotten apples in our midst, who are trying by all means to infect the rest of us with their deadly virus, incompetency. The wheels of the truck carrying SABC may be on the verge of coming off. As some scribes put it, what they don't realize is that it's only the board that needs tighter bolts, not some crazy nuts. The men and women who wake up every morning and rush to work at the SABC are parents, guardians, mothers, brothers, sisters, and SABC represents a place where they can plan theirs and their children's future. The plans we're about to share with you have been put together by teams of experts who are the only people who really care about the corporation's future endeavors. And I can assure you that these teams of experts are presently employed by the SABC. On all their planning sessions, they make sure that this ship does not sink on our watch. These are the people I trust to bring about the desired change at SABC instead of relying on consultants and people from outside the organization. Now is the time for us to present the strategy and future plans for the corporation as directed by the team of experts at SABC. In conclusion, it is with great pity and sadness to learn that most of the representatives who contracted the SABC on late production payments were representing their employers. And the sad part is that ownership of these production houses is in the hands of a few who rule both content coming in and going out at SABC. If we really are preparing to correct the wrongs of the past, we should take a critical look at the way production houses treat local content. Let me give you a simple scenario. A young scriptwriter from Soshanguve looks for a production house to prepare his production for TV. He or she gets the production going, but gives it to the production house to own without knowing what they have done is wrong, and there is no one to tell him or her otherwise. The story ends up being directed by someone who had absolutely nothing to do with the script, and they end up adding and subtracting the actual parts, replacing them with their own material. The moral of the story goes astray, sometimes deliberately, if it's taken up by individuals who have an agenda against the majority rule by South Africans. We must stop this. The portrayal of a black man as a murderer, a drunk, a drug addict, a rapist, a thief, a gang-toting corrupt individual is still prevalent on our screens. This needs to change. The introduction of regional TV will give our youth more power on the production side because they will be able to express their own views via local talent, local content. South Africa has not told its story yet. I'd like to take this opportunity and appeal to the Portfolio Committee on Communications to sit down and listen to us explaining the way we see things at present and the way forward for the public broadcaster. In order for us to implement these plans and strategies, we need strong and fair leaders in the board. finally, we have challenges that we need to contend with. The funding mix and the funding model lies at the core of our problems. And today, we need an opportunity to really, really comprehensively discuss this issue. The issues around DTT rollout are quite important as well because they form part of the key issue around funding. SABC News International, it's also an important issue that we need to bring forward to this forum. Lastly, but not least important, is the operating model of this organization. Once this has been entirely or comprehensively dealt with, we'll be able to know exactly what is it that we need to do in that public broadcaster. I will hand over now to Sipho Sithole to take us through the strategy.
Thanks, Gab, and thank you, Chairperson, and the committee members. I'm first going to give some just brief background. I know that we are short of time and that our CFO has to leave at about 2:30 because he is a bereavement. But just briefly to say that when I joined the SABC in June of 2007, a lot of work had been done then by the group executive and the then CEO of the SABC. And the then CEO of the SABC, Advocate Dali Mbofu. If I just recollect, I think by 2005, 2006, they had already constructed what became now the popularly known SABC vision, which is broadcasting for total citizen empowerment. This vision has been accepted by the broadcasting community around the world, actually reflects really the aspirations of any public service broadcaster and any recipient of public service broadcasting services. And from that vision, the SABC then further went on to craft a mission which was to be a people-centered, content-driven, technology-enabled, strategically focused, and financially sustainable. Out of that, they went on to craft what I consider to be the best values I've ever seen in any organization, which is conversations and partnerships, basically meaning that the SABC will forever be engaging in conversations with all of its stakeholders and shareholders and craft partnerships, and by at the same time making sure that we restore human dignity as a result of our historical circumstances and attempt to build a common future. That was really the foundation of the SABC strategy. And at that time, then the board and the group executive had appointed a group of consultants to then say that we have a strategy, we are clear about our mission, we are clear about our vision, and we now want to unpack that and say, how does it actually unpack in real life? I want to show you just this slide. Because this slide talks a lot. If you look at just the faces that you see, these are our citizens. And if you sit around here and look at that picture, you can see yourself in that picture. And then if you think, you can see Honorable Member Manamela on the far right. Top far right, not the one playing golf. No. But basically what this picture says is that the SABC represents the aspirations of every South African citizen in their different cultural, religious, and whatever background, and that we want to see the SABC as citizens reflecting us, reflecting our stories, telling our stories or telling the stories with us on our on our behalf or us telling the stories through the SABC. It is a difficult task to do. Because when you have only 3 television stations and you are trying to talk to a multiplicity of South African citizens and they all are watching you to say, have you covered my story? Have you told what I would like to hear that talks about me? I'm not worried about the one next door to me. I'm just talking about myself. as we come in various social backgrounds. And we get questioned on a day-to-day basis. So that is why it's so important as SABC to engage in those conversations and partnerships so that we make sure that we are not trampling on anybody's dignity and that we build that common future together. It's not as particularly difficult with the radio stations because we have about 15 public service radio stations that attempt to represent the aspirations of every South African citizen, at least to a great extent. You'll see UKhozi at the top represents mainly Zulu-speaking citizens. Umhlobo Wenene, Xhosa, SAFM is an English-speaking radio station. RSG is Afrikaans. We have Mungana Lonene, I think it's Xitsonga. Thobela is Sepedi. And Palapala is Xivenda. Lotus FM is broadcast in English, but it reflects the aspirations of the Indian community in South Africa. Then we have Musweding with Setswana. Likwala Kwala is Siswati. Isinawi Bakers, yeah. Ikwekwezi is Ndebele. Leseri FM is Sisutu. True FM is a young station in the Eastern Cape that talks mainly to youth. And then we have SABC Sport on radio, Radio 2000, which is a facility station. And then we've got XKFM, which represents the aspirations of the Tung and Kwe community. So with those stations, we make sure that we cover their stories in our various programs, whether they are religious, entertainment, education, and so forth. And then, we have the commercial radio stations that are three, Good Hope FM, Metro FM, and 5 FM. So we don't know about the other guys. So this is who we are. This is SABC. We also have SABC News and SABC Entertainment and SABC Education. Some of these are already being trialed on our DTT platform. So this is what the SABC is all about. But as we experiencing the changing media landscape, the SABC is always under in a massive pressure from all fronts to remain relevant. It's very difficult to remain relevant as a public service broadcaster against commercial imperatives and against the changing taste of audiences and citizens. And you try and make sure that you fulfill your mandate obligations and your public service aspirations. And having to deal at the same time with new competitors and new channels being launched, new licenses, with a threat of lost audiences to other media, because we are seeing the convergence of the broadcasting media landscape. People don't have to consume media through only through TV and radio as well. There are many other solutions that you can even see with the Times newspaper. When you read the Times, they already show you a website where you can go in and see a video or any blogging stuff. So SABC has to continuously observe all of those changes and try and remain relevant. And of course, the new technologies, as you can see, and the promulgation by government to make sure that we switch to a digital terrestrial television. So that is all the pressures that we are facing at SABC. I like this picture because it tells you exactly what the SABC is facing on a day-to-day basis. If you look at the red circle, those are your pay TV operators who historically have targeted wide audiences, high LSMs, who are now moving faster than the speed of sound into lower income and middle income black audiences. And it is not a coincidence that we have Super Sport now broadcasting PSL, matches and having one on a commercial platform, because we don't have the tech that they have to buy the rights to PSL, because their attempt is to eat into the audiences that the SABC has always enjoyed, which is historical black audiences that could not afford pay TV. And now when you see the new operators coming up with even cheaper DSTV compact boxes, because the attempt is really to go and make sure that they eat into the SABC audiences. We've always had a comfortable position with radio, from the lower LSMs up to just upper LSMs. But that is changing now, and because the SABC has to compete in these arrangements. So when we talk about a sustainable public service funding model for the SABC, it is because we have to deal with fierce competitors that are determined to make sure that the SABC ceases to exist if they could afford to do that. And for instance, an example that we always talk about that we don't think that we have been given a platform to really, really engage on is that when you have the pay TV operators beginning to offer cheaper services, they are targeting the very same citizens that we've been servicing in terms of our public service mandate. And they're doing that knowing fully well that they have no obligation to pay us TV licenses. So the must care, the must pay does not exist. Much as we have fought hard to make sure that anybody who's carrying our channels needs to be able to make sure that they pay for the channels. So when we lose people from the to the competition, they are not lost to the SABC because they still have access to SABC channels, and they're having that free of charge because unless we can get into their database to the subscription television operators to make sure that those will pay the licenses. So they would always just watch SABC channels regardless because we have an obligation to offer those channels. So these are the debates that we're having with the shareholder as well as with the CASA to make sure that there must be some obligations. At least give us a database so that we know who's sitting on that. With just a quick just assessment of what we see is going to be happening in the next few years. If you look at the top left, 2006, there were 2.8 people who could only afford radio, which we service very well because we've got enough radio coverage to service those people. But those people are actually reducing. They are, by 2012, we're estimating that there will be only 2.1 households, not people, sorry, that will only afford radio. So the question is that when you see a reduction of 24%, where are those people going to? Are they going to come to SABC? Or are they going to move to the pay TV operators because those operators can offer our SABC channels free of charge as long as they pay 199 rands, you know, cheaper DSTV compact, you know. And also, in 2006, there were 5.8 million households that could only afford free-to-air, which is based mainly SABC. There's a reduction of 36% that we foresee by 2012, where there will only be 3.7 million households that could only afford free-to-air. So if that happens, it is clear that unless the SABC begins to protect those citizens and protect its territory, we are going to be eventually losing most of those citizens to pay TV operators, and they will still have SABC channels anyway because we have an obligation to offer those channels. So we are envisaging that there will be a growth of plus 156% of citizens or households who could afford everything from free to air to pay TV and including radio. That is 5.7 million households. And that is what we've been dealing with when we were unpacking our strategies to say, what should the SABC be doing to make sure that we don't lose those citizens or those audiences? And I'm choosing carefully the word citizen because our public service mandate obliges us to talk to people as citizens as opposed to as audience or consumers, because we don't have a commercial mindset. We have a public service plus broadcasting obligation. So we have to make sure that the citizens that we offer, there is, as we call it, broadcasting for total citizen empowerment in terms of the programs that we are offering. Otherwise, we will be offering a porno movies at 11 p.m. like other stations. And so based on this analysis, we envisage that it's going to be even difficult to secure, commission, or acquire content in this fiercely competitive space. And we think that SABC program costs will rise by 15%. And we have Umvuzo Mbebe, who is the group executive for content enterprises, and he could answer some questions on how the SABC is trying to capacitate the industry to make sure that there is enough people with capabilities to produce local content, compelling content that is both educational, entertaining, as well as informative. But it is going to come not at a, it's going to come at a very high cost. So there is increasing demand for local content, And it gets even more difficult because people can pick and choose who they want to sell their content to. So as we keep on having more players coming into the fore, we have to make sure that we don't lose those producers that we have invested over a long period of time to make sure that they can give us the right content and that they've got good production capabilities. We spend about R1 billion every year in the commissioning and the production of local content in South Africa. That is what the SABC has been doing. So when we analyze this, I'm now going to take you quickly just a quick tour of what we then did after having understood the environment and the challenges that we're facing. That is when then we introduced this strategy that has been spoken about, but that we never had a chance just to share with South Africa. And at that time, we were hoping that by the beginning of last year, in 2008, would have then embarked on the strategy deployment process, because we thought that we had already made, we had a huge understanding of where our issues are and what we needed to do. And that was based on some work that we did, which was just to look at the external environment analysis, where we saw broadcasting going and what we think we needed to do as the SABC to make sure that we do that, that we remain relevant. But one of the areas that we looked long and hard on was our core processes in terms of our own efficiencies and organizational effectiveness, end-to-end processes. And we went through a serious diagnosis to come up with ideas and strategies on how we can make the SABC respond faster to the challenges that we are facing both internally as well as externally, but also where we could be able to cut a lot of fat if there was fat. We also looked at our people processes to see whether did we have the right people to embark on the strategy deployment process, and whether there was an organizational fit between the people that we have and our strategy as well, and what were the challenges in terms of skills and the war for talent that we have, and how do we retain those people. We also looked at whether we were structured properly, whether we had excess fat in terms of our people and as well as duplication of functions, and that is what we had already made sense of. Just quickly, when we had done that whole exercise, we identified about 12 priority areas that we thought were going to help us refine and execute our strategy. And that was one of them, was our audience understanding. That is why you saw that. That is a very, that's fresh work of the picture that I showed you, our new audience segments, to make sure that we understand our audiences so that we can offer them better content. And also to define really what do we mean by public value and how do we measure public value, which I'll share with you quickly after this. And then you also develop a clear plan for internal stakeholder management and engagement so that people understand what is their role in the unpacking and the pursuit of the new strategic objectives of the SABC. And then we build a strategy team within the SABC, and we also make sure that we align our strategy to risk management. And performance management also became the key driver against how the strategy would be measured. We also began to engage on a preferred funding and mandate position for the SABC. Last year, we were hoping that in June 2008, we're going to have the biggest conference ever to take place on African soil, which was going to be the Public Value Conference. We have a document already on that conference on public value. What were the drivers of public value, and what are the challenges of broadcasters out there in delivering public value, and how does the SABC sit within that whole area? And we are going to engage with quite a number of stakeholders so that you are going to begin to have an appreciation of the types of challenges of a public broadcaster that has to behave like a public broadcaster in a commercial environment, you know, without proper funding. So those are the challenges that we are still facing. And at the same time, we're refining and implementing our DDT strategy. I think we've made good progress that we were able to trial and switch on a digital terrestrial television platform last year, end of October. That was quite an achievement. We were even ready to launch full DTT in November this year. So we were already ahead of the government program. So we were just held back by the policies and regulation issues that had to be dealt with. And we looked at how to improve processes in commissioning and acquiring content. A lot of work has been done by Mvuzo's team in terms of bulk procurement processes, content commissioning and acquisition, reduction of write-offs, and we even costed that in terms of benefit. Our other areas that we looked at was just to focus on people issues, you know, define an appropriate you know, structure within the SABC to execute the structures that we have. But we also looked at other areas like technology, whether it was aligned to the business, the operating model, whether we had a proper operating model to deliver on the strategy, and look at governance procedures, develop leadership training programs, and also look at whether our channels were positioned properly in a multi-channel environment, and also to deal with the audience that we had segmented, and also look at our overall platform strategy. So after that work, we grouped this into 8 work packages. One, the first work package was the SABC value proposition, and that value proposition was to look at public value, the mandate and funding of the SABC, and platform positioning, audience understanding, SABC service offering, as well as technology alignment. It became a big chunk of work that we had to work. We looked at. We looked at the operating model, capabilities, structures and layers, interrelationships between various units and business units, processes and systems. Robin could tell you about TVPMS and IPM that, and SAP that we implemented, which, by the way, much as we will talk about, there is work that you have to bring in consultants to do. Like if you have to implement a SAP system, we don't have the SAP system to start with. You have to go and secure that from the owners of it, who can then build end-to-end and systems integration to make sure that your SAP system works already with your other system that you have. If you have to look at the television, TVPMS, television broadcasting media, what is it, Robin? Which is your scheduling. It's your scheduling system. We don't have those capabilities. So you have to then bring people with capabilities to install those systems. Now, IPM, Intellectual Property Management System, we don't have that system, so you have to go and get consultants to do that. We also look at the business model for content enterprises, whether the one that was put by the previous boards, whether it's still relevant in the changing media and broadcasting landscape, or whether should we look at a different content enterprises model. I have my own views about what I think how content enterprises should be structured, but that's another. We looked at organization and people, stakeholder management, leadership development, and then refining the core processes, strategic sourcing, content acquisition, review and improve the contracting process, airtime sales management and discounting. This slide basically tells you the type of work that was put in place that we were ready to implement last year by January. And also what we then did, we mobilized the entire SABC team. We deployed people, we had to recall people from their various units or business divisions to work with consultants in making sense of what we were saying and also coming up with recommendations. I can tell you that every second week of the month on Thursdays, we've got what we call the joint team members to look at how we are progressing with this kind of work. And we also, in terms of organization and people and perform, we also looked at clusters. We had to put clusters that make sure that there are synergies between clusters, that we don't have people going this way when the other division is going this way. For instance, we've got the operations cluster that has got most of our core processes or our core business units in the SABC. We've got the people cluster, we've got the technology cluster, we've got the funding cluster, and then we've got the risk strategy and governance cluster. And those clusters were meant to make sure that we don't have silos, that the business unit communicates, the business communicates across the organization, and everybody is represented in all of those clusters. I'm not going to go into detail around all of these work streams, but basically this slide that you see, we then went into detail to say, what does this work mean? If we're talking about there's going to be a work stream comprising of SABC employees and a team of consultants, how do we define public value, a mandate, and a funding model? And what does it mean? And in actual life, how do we implement that? And what do we have to mobilize to make sure there's a proper funding model for the SABC? Platform positioning, you know, when you talk about platform, we talk about radio, TV, and new media. That you make sure that a particular platform talks to a certain audiences, because there are audiences that would not be able to consume a particular platform. For instance, there are audiences that have not moved into new media. So when you offer content, you make sure that you don't offer content on a platform that people will not be sitting on. And then based on our audience understanding, we look at the SABC service offering to understand what audiences and advertisers want and ensure that this is reflected in SABC's service offering. This is an anomaly for the SABC, the public service broadcaster, that you have to bring into the advertisers when you talk about the SABC as a public service broadcaster. Because what then happens, you begin to start fashioning your content and your programming to attract a certain amount of advertisers, because those are the only people who can fund, who generate revenue for you. You know? But these are the issues that we're dealing with. And also to ensure that the SABC's TV channel service offerings are aligned to the overall audience and advertiser value proposition. So you'll see that advertiser cups keeps coming on and on in terms of what we're doing. The strategic sourcing also was a huge chunk of work, because we had to look and streamline all of our procurement processes to make sure that they deliver value and that we can negotiate better deals as opposed to we have 100 companies supplying T-shirts in 100 units of the organization. You know, those are the areas, just to simplify some of things that we're looking at, even including travel. You know. The operating model and structures and layers was one of the, still one of the areas. Content enterprise business model, also one of the areas that we're looking at. People management, process and capacity, contracting process. This has been one of the frustrating processes in the SABC, that when a channel has required a particular program and content knows exactly where to get that program in terms of production capacity, but the contract just takes too long to be completed so that the producer can start delivering on that content. And the channel has already announced the TX, the broadcasting date, and that time comes. And sales has already sold airtime based on knowing that a particular program is going to be on air. And that program is not on air because it took longer to have a contract in place. And SEP won't pay if there's no contract. So we looked at that to also shorten the contracting process so that we can deliver content on time and also deal with issues of schedule stability or schedule instability. You know. So it's part of the work that we're looking at. We also had to look at living the values. What is an SABC employee? You know, what type of values would you want to see? I mean, right now I know we are portrayed as thieves and corrupt people and everything that people can think of. You know, If you were to draw an image of what people say about us, I'm sure it will be a slimy, rhymy, you know, ugly, no picture. That's how we are being reflected. But that is not what we wanted the SABC to look like. Fat cat, you know, all of that. That's not what we wanted the SABC to look like. So the issue of living the values is what we were driving, so that those people can live with, they identify with the conversations and partnerships, restoring human dignity, build a common future, so that we can broadcast for total citizen empowerment. The last slide, which is the benefits tracking. All of these processes, we costed to say that by the time we are done with this work, we will see a revenue improvement of 401 to 602 million rand, bottom line. If we have fine-tuned our processes, we embarked on the strategy and we delivered exactly what we wanted to deliver. So I just want to emphasize, this is what we were ready to do last year in January. So what was the benefit case arising out of this work that we had identified? We have further refined it. I was just saying now 401 million to 602 million improvement on the bottom line. We have further refined that. Now, if we do what we intend to do, just looking at from year 2010 to 2014, bottom right, 5.6 billion rand arising out of the efficiencies and the strategy execution process that we would have done. But If you look at 2010, if we commit and we do what we say we want to do in terms of our strategy, we will realize in terms of revenue enhancement and cost reduction, 419 million rand. So you will have in your pack submissions by labor that the SABC has paid consultants 488 million rand to Gemini. This is the work that we were doing when Gemini was appointed by the board, by the group executive, to embark on this strategy, which we had defined ourselves. We were now asking them to work with us in the implementation of the strategy. And we are going to realize a revenue improvement of 400 million rand at least, up to 602 million rand. And you can see that 2011, almost a billion rand, 2012, 1.4 billion, 2013, 1.4 billion, 2014, 1.4 billion. And the areas that we're looking at, and I know that Robin had touched on them earlier last week, but quickly, if you look at quadrant one, which is on your top left there, these are high impact, easy to implement, things that we think we can do. They are within our control internally as the SABC. Schedule stability. Schedule stability basically talks about the type of revenues that you lose when you don't put the program that you had said you were going to put on air and the advertiser had put its money on that program. Whether it's because we delivered the program late or it was just not there because it was never ready by the time of delivery, or whether there was a public service obligation from the SABC to broadcast something of national interest. So you have to balance. So sometimes we lose revenue because suddenly there's a huge announcement or there's a program that is of national interest that government wants to push forward. So we have to take out a program that we that then results in schedule instability, and we have to return money back to that to the advertiser. So what the teams are busy looking at now is how to minimize schedule stability, because we know that there will always, minimize schedule instability, because we know there will always be schedule instability, whether it's because we have not delivered the program or something happened where to pull out the program. But if we do that, you can see that we will be able to at least realize over a period of time, 261 million rand would be realized by making sure that we've got tighter schedule stability. Then also there are issues of cost reduction, you know, where you can negotiate bulk content procurement, you know. To say, I buy from you big programs every year. Why must I negotiate one program separate from this program when you are the only supplier that gives me these programs? Give me one amount that we can work with, that you can give me Basela and top billing and so forth, because you are the supplier that gives us that. Why are you costing it separately? And that is the work that Mvuzo and his team are looking at, as well as better utilization of stock and reduction in write-off, you know, and then we also deal with issue of news international, news bureaus, and also termination of low-value projects. The termination of low-value projects, where those are the things that we said, they may be nice things to have that you would like to do, you know, that keep you excited at work and they motivate you, but do they fit in terms of what we are trying to do? And we even came up with a criteria on how to measure those kind of projects. Do they deliver public service? Do they enhance our competitiveness? Do they enhance revenue? Do they deliver to the first citizens, which is our own employees, or do they deliver to the external citizens? And if they don't, or do they also enhance our technology and our capabilities? If they don't fit in all of those things, let's park them. You'll do them sometime later when everything is fine. So we've looked at all of that, and if we terminate those projects over a period of 5 years, 186 million rand. So just that quadrant alone would give us 1.5 billion rand revenue improvement in terms of, you know. And then quadrant two will also be easy to implement, but they don't give us much money. But we have to do them, you know. Like, make sure that your department, if you've got five people, not five people have got, they subscribe to the same newspaper. Have a reading section, one Sowetan, one Cape Agas, you know, in one division. So those small things, temporary labor, phone, how much time do you spend on your phone, 3G cards. And then we have areas where we say, these are also high value but difficult to implement, but we will work on them over a period of time, and by the time we get there, we will have realized some value. One of the areas that we're dealing with, it is in your pack under revenue enhancing, is the issue of TV license increase, TV VAT exemption, DSTV database management, so that we know who subscribes to pay TV operators, who actually watch our channels, and do they pay TV license those people? And also looking at the subsidy for low-income groups. We've also costed that we've got a business case. Some of that we've already submitted to the shareholder. But in summary, all of that, so revenue enhancement will give us about 3.8 billion rand over a five-year period, cost reduction about 1.7, and then also working capital management, which is this year 98 million rand. Yeah. So in terms of our strategy roadmap, this is our value proposition. You know, it's a three-year strategy roadmap where we're saying that the SABC will make sure that we place our audience understanding at the heart of the organization, that we are able to deliver and measure public value, that our value proposition also covers platforms and content, and we provide a coherent approach to audiences across SABC, TV, radio, and new media. We have got a clearly defined public service mandate, a sustainable funding mechanism, and that we are positioned to meet the competitive challenges of a rapidly and changing environment. And more importantly, that the SABC has got the relevant skills and competences to deliver on the value proposition. And we will do that by making sure that we've got a clearly defined operating and business model that drives efficiencies and organizational effectiveness. So what are our strategic ambitions then beyond 2010? To sustain a dominant audience and revenue share in traditional platforms and grow audience and revenue share in new platforms, that is new media, you know. We also want to revolutionize the industry segmentation benchmark, set a new and accepted segmentation currency for trade and drive mindset. We have defined our audience segments beyond just LSMs. We'll show you now quickly how we have defined our audience. But to be a provider of African content globally, you know, through, you know, three channels, news, sport, and maybe African channel, and also sell our programs internationally, and sell skills and production capacity. You know, we have a plan to establish the SABC Academy. Right now, we are working on the development of the concept and the training modules. This is one of the projects that we also deferred to later. We said it's good, but we can't do now because we don't have the funding. But by the time we launch that, we'll be able to train, because the fact is we're the only skilled broadcaster on the continent. And the continent looks up to us for training, broadcasting, you know, core broadcasting training, and also other training. So we have to set up that training academy, not only for our people, but also just for the continent. We also believe that we'll be owning a new media distribution platform. We are embarking now on our online media strategy, which we'll be presenting for adoption by the group executive in a month or so, and then recommend to the board. So that would then make us a center for broadcasting and public service excellence through that SABC Academy. But we also want to be SABC Digital. So we are committed to this digital migration. And also a model for IP and rights management. The SABC, we're probably the most archived broadcaster in terms of content, audio or visual at the SABC. But we need to make sure that, do we know that actually whether we own that or it is owned by somebody? And whether we can take some of that and digitize it so that we can begin to exploit it, because it's meaningless if it's sitting in the vault. So those are the issues that we're dealing with. Cutting edge relevant broadcasting infrastructure. We've been upgrading our broadcasting technology, and we've also been we are starting to digitize some of the archives as well. So we want to deliver on public value, so long as we remain sustainable in terms of our funding. I just want to share with you, if you bear with me, the work that we did. I mean, we spoke about deliver and measure public value. We did work as part of our strategy execution process, where we said, now that we think this, we know what the citizens want from us, but are we delivering exactly what they've asked us to do? Firstly, let me just say that, again, we are driven by our overarching vision, which is broadcasting for total citizen empowerment. But we also further defined a new vision, a new public service vision. And this public service vision basically said we want to build an emotional bond with our audiences, with our citizens. There is no need for them to migrate to any other platform, because when we once we have understood, which we now know that we understand them, we can deliver content that talks to them, specifically to them, and different from the person next to them. You know? And then we then came up with this new audience model, which is a shift from the LSM. It's more on attitudes and psychographic study that we applied to come up with with these audiences. And we've got the now generation, global citizens, nation builders, rooted survivors, and the established. And we talk to them through our platform, which is TV, radio, and new media. I'm not sure what's happening. Okay, who are the global citizens to us? Remember, we've crafted the public service vision that says we'll create an emotional bond with each of our citizens, of our audiences, and we'll talk to them directly as we understand them. Global citizens are, we say the SABC will serve the global citizens with radio and new media service that bring the world to them while reminding them of all that is best about South Africa. Because these are people who are mobile. You know, they go to other countries, they look at how other countries do, and they think, oh, we wish also South Africa also was up to scratch with what is happening. So we're keeping with the trends, and we make sure that when they are here, they don't feel like, I wish I had stayed where I was. No. So they still feel at home. The survivors and the established, the survivors would be what we refer as lower LSMs, people who are forgotten in remote villages somewhere, you know. And we say we know who they are, and we will talk to them on the content that speaks to them, you know. And the established are those people who say, you know, this South Africa has changed. Actually, we have been totally alienated, so we're just going to continue to do what we do. We're just going to play golf and look at them messing up the country. Look at the content that they put on TV. It's no longer about us. So we've also crafted those kind of you know, content that we make sure that when we move into this multi-channel environment, we'll have content that speaks to them. The rooted are those people who will protect tradition and culture and identity with all might. They are the ones who call the SABC and says, that program that you flighted is not correct. You are misrepresenting our culture. So we have to engage with them in terms of conversation partnership. So we have to understand the cultural diversity and the richness of the country, and we talk to them differently. The now generation, obviously, are the youngsters. You find them on SABC One, but we also want to remind them that as you grow in your global perspective and you want to look like the other guys in other countries, remember that you are South African. So we'll always have content that reminds them of who they are. And obviously, nation builders are the flag bearers. These are the guys who will tell you that 2010 is going to be the most successful. You can say whatever you want. This country is going to succeed. So we have to give them content that gives them that pride, that national pride. And so when we do that, then we talk to content and say, content enterprise, now that you understand our audiences, can you deliver on that type of content? Global citizens, we know that they like sport, technology, news, and travel. The now generation are more into fashion, outdoor life, entertainment. The survivors are more about environment, gardening, home improvement, and education. The established also about, you know, that, and the rooted cultural affairs, cultural gardening community, and the nation builders. But core content also would include it on various dramas, movies, sports, sitcoms, soap, and news. So we then went out and say, we need to measure how the SABC is doing in terms of delivering public value. Now, when you talk about delivering public value, you have to separate it between individual value, which is the audience or the consumer, the person who likes to watch Seven Delang, or generations, that's an individual, that's a consumer, or a citizen who is watching if the SABC is going to step on the wrong side, and then they're going to make sure that they call and they tell the SABC that this is not the SABC that we want. They are not necessarily attached to any particular program, but these are the people who are actually watching the SABC, whether the SABC is delivering its value. And of course, economic value is how we generate in terms of what we do, whether we are creating new entrepreneurs, you know. And I've defined that. We did the study, and I'm just now giving a summary, that in terms of what we do as the SABC, the cost of our mandate is 1.06 billion rand. But the value that the SABC creates in the execution and delivery of that mandate is between 2.57 billion rands to 2.6. That is a study, a scientific study that we did in October 2007, and it was finished in December and publicized. And You remember that last year, early January or February, there was a second survey that was done by the HSRC that said the SABC was the most trusted public institution after the churches. So it confirmed even the findings were exactly the same findings as the one that we had done separately through an independent research company. So if you compare the amount that we receive through licenses, which is just about 900 million rand, so we create an excess surplus in terms of what we do as the SABC, equivalent to 1.2 billion rand. That is what people get extra. And yet they only give us just about 900 million rand in terms of TV license. So there is a disparity. You know. But what did people say? They said over 70% of the people that we sampled, they gave us an approval rating of between 7 to 10 or above. And 88% of those respondents felt that the SABC provides a large or moderate contribution to South Africa. And they were willing to even pay more, because we then asked them, if we were a paid TV service, how much would you be willing to pay? There were people who were willing to pay from 15 rands to those who were willing to even pay 100 and something rands just to have SABC service in their household. So the willingness to pay is around about the value is 2.2 billion rand. And news was ranked within the top three genres by over half of all the people that we researched. And news and education are the top genres for both genders, both men and women, followed by children and drama for women and sport for men. And citizens' respondents, these are people who now just worry about SABC, not about a particular program. They said, for you, SABC, make sure that you've got your news, your children's and current affairs programming, you know, and we think you're doing very well on that. So these are the figures. Individual value, when we looked at that, 71% of the respondents, they gave us a rating of 7 or 10, 2.2 billion rands. They were prepared to pay up to 20 rands per month for that. Citizen value was 60 million. Economic value is about 280 to 332. TV programming and content cost about 824 million at the time when we did that. Transmission is 18 million. Radio programming about 154. And other development initiatives about 65 million. Those are things that we do to develop the industry. But just look at what we are asking them. On your left, we ask them what they consider to be the importance of public service objective. They said to us, education programming is number one, broad coverage is number two, high standards of news and current affairs, number three. We want to be spoken to in our mother tongue. Information, nation building and democracy programs, issues important to all South Africans, national identity and pride, reflect diversity of South Africa, showcase South African talent, national sports programming, entertainment program. And then they said, these are the important things in the order of importance, from number 1 to number 11. Then you ask them to tell us how we are ranked, how we are performing against that. And we perform fairly well. I mean, if you look at, they said news and current affairs were number 3 in terms of most important, and this is the rating that they gave us, if you look at the score on your right-hand side. So we've done very well and in terms of that study, and they were prepared to pay. The consumer on your left was prepared to pay up to 23 rands per month. The citizen on your right was also prepared to pay about 20 rands, 67% of those, and 33% were prepared to pay 16 rands just to keep the SABC. So in a nutshell, that was the public value study. I've just summarized it. But what does it mean? It means that the SABC as a public service broadcaster is crucial to South Africans. They are even prepared to pay for it if it was a paid subscription service, and that it gives us public value and it measures a score of 7 to 10 in terms of the people that we had sampled, and that we deliver more than what they are paying for us. So we were going to be unpacking all of these issues at our public value conference last year, and we are still determined to do it hopefully this year. Now, what are we hoping to do this year, this current financial year, 2009 to 2010? And we are only just focusing right now on core business, which is our operations. It's to implement our DTT business plan, to meet and deliver on SABC 2010 FIFA World Cup, to operationalize our new audience segment, to implement our platform network strategy so that all the platforms, they talk to each other, that you don't have one channel servicing audiences that don't belong to them. That should be sitting on SABC 2 and they are sitting now on S3. You know, this audience cannibalization. So the strategy is very important, the network strategy. But to protect our audience share on traditional platforms, at least on the radio and TV that we have, and introduce new platform, new audiences, and grow them on our new platforms, new media, and other new broadcasting, new media broadcasting platforms. Continue to innovate in content production and commissioning. Deliver content that is aligned to platforms and audience segmentation. Drive cost efficiencies across the relevant business units. Deliver public value. Drive a single-minded and uniform marketing and communication plan for the SABC. Provide market intelligence information to inform business decisions. And then invest in capacity and capability building for the new broadcasting environment. This capacity and capability is not only about internally. It's about what Mvuzo does when he interacts with the broadcast, with the production sector, that we can make sure that they have got the capability, they've got the right skills, and that we provide them with whatever that we can to make sure that they give us, they produce the right content for South Africa and maintain leadership in broadcasting. I'll finish in the next 15 minutes. So we then unpacked it. I'm not going to go into detail. We then unpacked all of these strategic actions into clearly measurable deliverables. But obviously, to deliver on what we say are our strategic actions, we still face challenges. The financing of our operations is a serious challenge. If you're hoping to receive so much revenue from your advertiser and you don't get what you expected and you still have to finance the operation and deliver public value, that's not the easy thing to do. Misaligned systems and process to deliver on the core business of the SABCs, we keep interrogating those processes. Deliver public service against commercial imperatives, it is not an easy task. The skills for the new environment, high cost of capacity building, availability of requisite cutting edge broadcasting technology. If you have to be relevant as a broadcaster against new players, we have to have cutting edge broadcasting technology. We should not look old and dull because we're the SABC. But that needs to be funded. Broad and common understanding of the broadcasting environment across the SABC. Implementation of digital migration and convergence, and the growing cost of content becomes a forever, you know, growing serious challenge. Retention of audience and market share in the face of inevitable audience fragmentation, and the launch of news and sports channels in preparation for DTT. So I won't go into detail around exactly what we are saying, but what you see on your left, those are the objectives which are already highlighted in the key strategic actions. And then we then say key performance area to deliver on that, this is what it is. Talk to us next year. We will tell you how much we've progressed in delivering what you see in terms of our promise of delivery at the end of this current financial year. And that talks about DTT, 2010 FIFA World Cup, audience centricity, you know, and including transforming the public commercial service into a commercially viable and competitive business of the SABC. That is in your pack. If you don't mind, I'm not going to dwell on that. So I'm going to skip. Let's look at what we did last year, because I think the biggest conversation that has been happening across the country, whether in this house or through newspapers, is that the SABC has got 800 million rands hole in its bottom line. Yes, but what is the SABC about? Because when you listen to the conversations, you actually get confused whether are we a commercial broadcaster? Are we supposed to be a profit-driven company? Or are we how do you balance profit and delivering public value? This is the conversation that has to be held with the nation, whether should the SABC be worried about profit or should it be funded properly, but it must be run efficiently and use its funds to deliver on public value. So we did more than just losing money, but we did more other things that are not financially quantifiable. For instance, we were very clear about that this year in our delivery of skills and capacity building, we are going to make sure that we attract, retain, develop skills for the broadcasting industry, and that these are the work that needed to be done, and we have begun to move towards that, to prepare that we've got enough skills. For instance, in technology, you know, we are using technology as a pilot program to make sure that we have an understanding of what type of skills are going to be needed in the new broadcasting landscape. So 29% of technology we have done is a skills audit, and we are already looking at the training that will be required to make sure that there is a balance between what we see as a gap and what the skill we have in the organization as we speak. The SABC Academy. Our intention is to establish the SABC Academy. The group executive has approved the concept, and now we are busy with the design and development of the concept, and curriculum has been approved for that is approved for 2009-2010. We don't have a plan yet when the academy will be up and running, but we are hoping that when we look at our budget for the next financial year, we'll already begin looking at the bricks and mortar of the training academy itself. The leadership pipeline, we've also progressed on that. So we know who the next generation executives are. We know who the next generation group executives, who the next generation general managers, and we have to look at now what type of training will be put in place to make sure that when those people are called upon, they already have the requisite training and they can actually go and run this company. And we do a lot of work around nation building, which is the core of our existence, which is to promote issues of national importance and nation building across portfolio of services, including programming that promotes democracy and tolerance and reflects the aspirations of South African citizens. So portfolio of management that has ensured that there is commitment across a number of content themes to deliver on that corporate goal. For instance, just we are always involved in issues around 16 days of activism against the abuse of women and children, National Youth Day, Human Rights Day, International and National Children's Day, World Day, AIDS Day, Heritage Day, and other areas that we get called upon by the industry to participate that promote nation building. And there are special events that we've done in the past year, the Durban and Northwest Film Festival, where we are showcasing our regional talent and providing a platform where regions can communicate with SABC, the South African Traditional Music Awards, SABC Crown Gospel Awards, South African Film and Television Awards, the SABC Vuka Sizwe Benefit Concerts. And there are also objectives around social cohesion, and we've done programming that promotes social cohesion, and we've delivered on the following areas, for instance, on education, program Kululega, 90 Plain Street, Swara Hanang, Our Moment, Talk South Africa. Can you pronounce this one, Gap? This one?
Sinecon.
Sinecon, okay. I think so. Yeah, you're supposed to say Sinecon.
That's your language.
Yeah, Shift. Content Hub, we're focused on issues of faith, trace your roots, chat room, Spirit Sunday. We also done programs around recognizing our heroes, you know, which is called the Icon Series, and also just some of the areas of historical importance, you know, the manuscripts of Timbuktu, the Robert Mangalisa Sobukwe story, the Winnie Mandela Speaks, the life of Steve Biko, the Oscar Peter life story, A Life in Music with Johnny Clegg, Olive and Adelaide Tambo. We've also done work on our contribution to the African Renaissance and NEPAD. We facilitated the AUB and FIFA Rights Agreement. We organized the second African Union of Broadcasters Conference. We launched two of the five AUB projects like Greening Africa, HIV/AIDS. We have also produced and distributed African Olympics Channel and African First. SABC also underwrote the Olympics rights for AUB to ensure access for other broadcasters in Africa, and the establishment of SABC News International and Foreign Bureaus. Financial, I won't talk about the financials. Robin will talk about that. But we are also engaging. The issue around closing the funding gap and finding the right model and the funding mix for the SABC, we are engaging government around dealing with the issues of this over-reliance on commercial revenue by ensuring that there are ways of funding the SABC so that we are not in the same position that we are in right now. You know, for instance, we began to engage the government to fund 50% of SABC News International. you know, and also the issue around funding during dual illumination as we migrate on the broadcasting digital migration. And we did submissions to the DOC on that. But one of the specific areas that we're talking to government about, to the shareholder, is the removal of VAT on license revenues. I mean, we collect TV license, then we pay VAT on that. That's a huge chunk of money that we have to pay to the receiver. And yet, the TV license revenue is reinvested back in programs that deliver on our public service mandate. So we are saying that, can we be relieved of the obligation of paying VAT on that? Also, the imposition of broadcast levy, which means anything that is broadcast ready as that can broadcast TV or radio related thing, we would like to have a share of that when it's sold through retail. Also, an introduction of license fee subsidy for low-income groups and TV license collection from paid TV operators. That is one thing that we would like government to help us to make sure that the paid TV operators can give us the database of their subscribers so that we can check whether those will have paid their TV license. I think there's about 3 million subscribers on Mnet DStv, and how many of those actually, who, because all of them see the SABC channels, and how many of those are paying TV license? We've done our multi-platform positioning to make sure that we are ready for the digital migration and that we've got a multi-channel environment that talks to the new audience segments, the six audience segments that we have. We're quite happy that we will be able to service now all of the six audiences separately on specific channels if and when we migrate to a multi-channel environment through DTT. So the multi-channel lineup has been designed exactly to deliver on our new audience segments, which is a different presentation if we had to do that. So our audience focus is, we're making sure now that everything from content planning and programming and from channel alignment and platform positioning, that it speaks specific to our new audience segments. And let's just see how we have performed in local content delivery. We have exceeded our local content TV requirements. For instance, if you look at public broadcasting service, which is the SABC 1 and 2, we're standing at 77% in terms of delivery on our content, as opposed to 55%, which is the ICASA requirement. SABC 1 is 77%, SABC 2 is 76%. That was last year I'm talking about. And then public service, public commercial services, SABC 3, 49% across all day. We have also exceeded local content radio requirements. For instance, all of our radio stations, they play 60% or more of local music now. And then radio, PCS Radio, which is Good Hope 5 FM and Metro, they are standing at 30% against 25% cases. And these are the content themes that speak directly to our public service obligations. And we look at the corporate themes, which is children and youth, gender and disability, natural and early history, elderly, heritage, African Renaissance, identity and nation building, arts and culture, indigenous knowledge, and science and technology. You can see that against the target, there's only two where we did not meet our target, that is gender and disability, 8% against the 11% that we had set for ourselves. But we have even gone further to say, regardless that we underperformed in certain areas, we are even putting a higher target for this current financial year, which ends in March next year. You look at on your far right. And also the content themes, we are also delivering programs that talk about social values, crime and justice, rural development, race and class, health, finance, democracy and citizenship, enhancing total citizen empowerment and fashion. Now, these are the challenges of a public service broadcaster in a commercial environment. The other guys don't have to worry about any of these things, which is very attractive for the advertiser, because the advertiser is looking for audiences that stay entertained and on and so forth. And we have to have audiences and citizens that we have to deliver on this type of programming, and still try and convince the advertiser to go and advertise on our platform. They're going to say, who's going to be watching stuff on rural development? I'm not going to be advertising on that program. I'm going to go to the other guy next door. DTT migration, we switched on the 1st of November, and we are busy now with our encoding and master.
How long is it going to
How much longer are you going to be?
I think it's 2 minutes now.
Okay.
We've done the technology upgrade and the digitization of broadcasting infrastructure. We've secured our state-of-the-art OB units for 2009 Confederations Cup in 2010. We've also upgraded the Studio 9 and Studio 10. And we've got the multi-channel, our playout system is being upgraded. And we're also upgrading the regional radio infrastructure in some of our regions. And we've implemented the TV BMS. So we are hoping that this current financial year will begin to digitize some of our archives. Yeah. Risk and governance is a key issue. That's why we are also saying that we need to have a forensic investigation across the SABC, all divisions, so that this issue can be laid to rest. Whether are we breaking all rules of corporate governance, and whether we are stealing the SABC money and so forth. Let us have a forensic investigation. I think that's about it, Chair. Thank you very much. It was a snapshot. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we want to take questions now? Right, I see the hands up. General Lomisa.
Chairperson, I was going through these documents which were tabled here, and I come across with the document coming from the Communication Workers Union and MWASA, and I was wondering as to whether it would not be fair that perhaps we postpone this presentation and ask the executives first to respond to these allegations, because I don't think we will be comfortable at the end of the day to be addressed by people who are accused of these serious crimes. So whether at the end of the day we will say it has to be referred to an audit firm, but I think it would be fair to give the executive more time to respond to this, because it looks like some of the allegations which were uttered in earlier on by the board members are now being confirmed by the people who work in that institution. So personally, I don't think I would feel comfortable, with due respect to the executive members, to come and talk about the strategy, whereas they are being accused of looting the resources of the SABC.
Jefferson, my question is about process. First of all, I want to know, is this a new strategy? Because I didn't hear much saying about this is an improvement on the old strategy and this is why we've made the relevant changes. But in terms of the process, I want to know, there was made mention of the role of consultants in drawing up these documents. What is the cost of the consultants? But also, what will be the role of the consultants in the implementation of this plan? And in the implementation of this plan, if the consultants are involved, is there any plan of transfer of skills? Because we can't rely on consultants all the time. There must be some transfer of skills. Also part of the process, Chairperson, I want to know whether there's any consultation to draw up the strategy, consultation with the stakeholders, consultation with the workers of the SABC, consultation with the public, because this is a public broadcast. And before they finalize this strategy. And then lastly, Chairperson, also in part of process, was there any agreement with the board on this strategy? And this strategy, is this strategy owned by the board and by the executive? Thank you.
Chairperson, I feel we are sort of in a position that we must also now follow on with the presentation by the CFO. But the concern is that we would not be in a position to really interrogate everything to the bottom of it in the course of the day, because if I am correct, he's asked to be excused shortly. So if you could perhaps just help us, direct us through all of this. We've heard a lot about strategic plans, etc. But in the meantime, we need to have more of a hands-on plan to really change, sort of a real overnight changeover plan for the SABC. And I'm concerned that if Mr. Nicholson is not going to be here to help us through that, to say that we really now need to do this, that, and the following, how are we going to deal with all the different questions that we would like to pose to them? Secondly, I just also wanted to concur with what the Honourable Holomisa has said about some of the allegations that were made that seem to be very, very serious. Some of us would like to inquire about implementation of different provisions of the PFMA, but we don't know if it's suitable to investigate the PFMA and its implementation now in view of what we have received as a submission before the committee. If you could perhaps just direct us on that issue. There are specific questions that we would like to pose. One general one is to say, there was clearly a very thorough analysis conducted of the different, well, the sectoral analysis of the audience of the SABC. Critical question is still, why is the SABC losing if we cannot compete in that middle market? Why are people migrating away? And then secondly, if we're saying we're running short on TV licenses, and they want to increase the license fee, what is the current rate of retrieval of licenses? What is the shortfall, and what measures are in place to see that they can in fact retrieve the television license fees? Because if you then increase the fee and you do not have the capacity to make sure that section of the revenue comes in, it's actually a futile exercise. And I just wanted to know if they can tell us what is their rate, what could they do to improve it, and how will we ensure that at least that gap is closed? Thank you. I'm not referring to Mr. Mamponi, that gap.
Members, can I... You know, the allegations are flowing fast and furious nowadays. You know, the allegations that have been made by the former chairperson documented are stable before us. We have circulated Mr. Mbeki's document now. There are some insinuations there. We've got two documents now from the unions. Can I suggest that we put those in one basket, that we deliberate as a committee what we want to do with that? Because I don't think we can expect the executive management to respond to these immediately, because these documents have just been tabled. So I say that we just hold. I've noted the issue that has been raised by the general. Can we decide later on, when we are concluding, what kind of actions we want to propose and what we think we should be doing about these allegations? Certainly, this committee is not in a position to start investigating on its own. We don't have that capacity. We don't have the time for that. But there are other arms of the state, for example, that could possibly be given the responsibility and that they should report to us. I think that's the discussion that we can hold. I don't want us to enter into the discussion on the allegations, because these are untested, and it would not be fair to put people on the floor without giving them fair opportunity then to start responding to very specific allegations and amounts and those kinds of things. But the allegations are important for us to note, and I think we must have a general approach, which is that we don't want to sweep anything under the carpet. We have to begin to grab this bull by the horns and see what can be done about it. All right, can I give the management an opportunity to respond to some of the issues I've noted, Ms. Tori and Ms. Magazi?
Okay, let me start with Ms. Killian, a question about a shortfall on TV licenses collection. We don't have a shortfall. In fact, consistently over the years, we have exceeded our targets. The real problem that we are facing as a national broadcaster, as a public broadcaster, is that our rates of license collection haven't been increased for the past 8 years. And that money, it's so critical in terms of, you know, developing our content, you know, for the institution. So even last year when the market was depleted, subdued with the international economic meltdown, guess what, you know, that sector of our business, you know, overachieved in terms of their revenue projections. So we are doing quite well. The only difficulty in South Africa that we haven't had the support that says on an annual basis we are able to actually increase our rates and also to make sure that those that actually are viewing on the DSTV channel or Mnet channel are able to actually pay their licenses. So we have been actually, you know, our strength has been largely emaciated because of that. But we hope through the ICASA strategic support we'll be able also to acquire revenue out of those audiences, which are quite large on the platform, to actually get revenue for that. So we do not have a shortfall on TV licenses. We are doing exceptionally well. In fact, that is one. It's just that SIPO skipped one slide where it showed revenue performance of SABC. If there is one area that we should be proud of, it's the revenue collection on TV licenses. You know. We are not losing audiences, you know, at the end of the day. Under these difficult times, competitive markets that we see on audience proliferation, we are not losing audience share. What we are losing, it's the revenue share. But if you want to talk about the past, you know, fiscal, you know, financial performance, you'll find out that the total market share of revenue also did decline terribly. I mean, it was about 2 to 6%, you know, total market share growth. If we were to check, you know, your advertising revenue in terms of ABEX, your MIT, you'll see that the market was really, really depleted at the end of the day. But we're still holding on our audience share. The only thing that we are actually faced with as a public broadcaster is the difference between the commercial audiences and public audiences. I think that also is exacerbated by the fact of defining what is it that we want to do as a public broadcaster. Do we pursue commercial interest, you know, in sacrifice of mandatory obligations? But that question has been so eloquently asked all the time. I think we need to actually understand what is it that we want to do as a public broadcaster. And I think the strategy has also clearly articulated that. So those are the challenges that we are actually facing and working very hard to actually deal with them. As to other questions relating to consultants, Sipa, I'm sure you can actually, you know, answer on those ones.
I'll ask my colleagues to deal with that, the chief people officer. And also I would like to deal with the process on how we got to where we are with the consultants. But I can tell you that there are no consultants remaining in terms of the implementation of the strategy. It's being implemented by the team at the SABC.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Just to deal with the Honourable Member Killing's specific question around the role of consultants and skills transfer. To begin with, the strategy was put in place by the management team. We were quite clear that the role of consultants is going to be managed within a specific time frame. In fact, we were quite decisive to make sure that we don't bring them on board until the head of strategy came on board, because we wanted one key focal point in the business to remain with the reservoir of skills and those tools. but also we ensured that in each and every business area, according to all of those areas, we had senior members of staff who were going to remain with those specific skills. Just for an example, in the area of stakeholder management, Advocate Kuta here behind me was the key focal point. So she was participating alongside with a consultant. She has now remained, and she's driving that aspect of our strategy. But also what we made sure we do was that we would not compromise on the deadline of the exit of the consultant. So that was managed quite tightly and specifically. And across the business, whether it's on television or radio, there is an individual that has remained with the real skills and the tools of implementing that. We had the deadline of 11th of June, and each and every head last year, each and every head of the business signed off and remained with the real tools. So everything you see here now actually has been put together by full staff members of SABC.
I also ask about the cost.
Yes. Thank you very much. Very briefly, Chair. Thank you, Sipho. The genesis of the strategy really came from around about end of 2006, just to go back to your question about how it was put together. And it really was quite a simple process where some of the issues that Sipho raised were tabled. He said there's a changing landscape, there's a bloated structure, there's a whole lot of problem identification. And we went through that process with quite a fine-tooth comb for a number of months. Around about March, April of 2006, we then started the beginnings of this process. We presented it to the board, the funder board, the old board. And we gave a broad strategic framework of where we were going. The executive then, I think, took the next 6 months consulting internally and externally, and I think we even presented to the committee here about where our thinking was going towards the end of that year. At the beginning of 2000, or rather at the end of 2006, in November, what we usually did with the old board was we'd have a two-day meeting on the 7th or 8th, around about that of December, where we give them the broad strategy to approve, so that when we do budgeting in January, we're doing it against an approved strategy. So we did that. And so all this was homebrewed stuff. There were no consultants at all at that stage. We deliberately said this whole thing of putting clusters and so on was our own idea, which came because an obvious thing that came out of the diagnosis that we had done was this thing of silos. Was quite clear that people were doing good work, but they were doing it in silos, and they were not talking to each other. So one of the responses was clearly to put the cluster system, just as a prominent example of something that came out of that consultation process. Then we said, once the strategy is in place, we obviously need external expertise to implement a strategy. And we made it very clear, the consultants, as they usually do, wanted to say, no, we don't want any help because this strategy is homegrown. All we want is for you to give us the wherewithal of the implementation tools of the strategy. And a circumscribed project, time limit, and so on. And at that stage, the cost of doing that work over a period of about a year, I think, came to about 50 million rand. On the 30th of August 2007, the funder board then approved, the consultants came and presented to them, and they approved the what we now call the implementation strategy. This work then carried on, as Sipho was saying, and quite frankly, at the beginning of 2008, we were, in our view, on the verge of flying the organization into implementing this strategy. I mean, the rest, I think everybody knows then what happened. But the costing really was something like this, to simplify it, Honorable Delil. When we presented to the board, as Sipho said, we said, here's a strategy.
If we follow everything in this strategy, the worst case scenario is that it will realize about 450 million rand savings. The best case scenario, it will be 602 million rand savings. So we said against this, and we're going to call this consultants to account on these figures. These are figures that we interrogated with them, and they were not going to get paid if they had not produced this. So we said it's quite simple. If you're going to spend 50 million rand to realize at least 450 million rand, it makes sense, and the board agreed with us. So that was the overall thinking, really. But also just a small point. One of the things, which is what Tumelelo touched on, is that it was clear that you can't just bring in consultants when you yourself are not ready to implement a strategy. Just an example, I recruited SIPO specifically to head up two units. Because there was no head of strategy in the organization. I said, I need a head of strategy and a head of risk management in my office. And that's how that position was created, because I needed somebody who had the knowledge of the parastatal sector. He had served in the parastatal sector. He had been a deputy CEO at Gallo Music, but also he comes from the music industry, so he knows the creative side of the thing as well. And so we put that office in place, capacitated it, had staff there, and so on, so that he then would be the person who interfaces with his consultants and holds them accountable. And I'm sure they knew him more than all of us. He had almost daily contact with them to make sure that they do their deliverables. Thank you.
The board sign off on the strategy?
Yes.
Professor Gilbert?
Honourable members, just to, I think some of the sequence and the chronology has been covered by Dali's input. The point I was going to make was that I think because of the genesis of this was in the previous board, it was a lot of the original endorsement of this strategy was actually in the previous board. Of course, several of those board members came through into the new board. So there certainly was the opportunity for some continuity on the endorsement of this. Just to remind ourselves how we got to where we were without the successful implementation, or not as successful, or not having met the timelines that we wanted now. The strategy was then, of course, presented to the new board. You will recall that the previous board had made a request to the portfolio committee to appoint the new board far earlier than that the previous board had been appointed, so that you didn't actually come in at the start of the strategy and the budget, so that there would be some continuity. And although, in fact, the process was started earlier, the appointments weren't finalized, and so there wasn't the ideal overlap that one might have had, and it did produce the resulting problems. In the sense that the board was then presented with the strategy, there were a number of new members as well, of course. At the same time, it was presented, well, shortly after it was presented with the budget. And it takes us back to the events of the last week, where the board was concerned about the deficit budget and the implementation costs associated with the strategy. I think there's been a lot of support for the strategy. I think there was some concern that the strategy wasn't presented to the portfolio committee last year when we met, or earlier this year. So I think there have been certain serious problems with it. I think the concerns, as I recall, and perhaps Andile can add to it or remind me, was that although there were to be these savings, we weren't seeing them play out immediately on a kind of month-by-month basis yet, and obviously this runs on. And that the savings were incorporated in the budget, but we were still very deeply in deficit. As I've said before, there were very particular reasons to that. It went back to the contradictions in the funding model and all the points that we've made before, part of which the strategy and process was meant to deal with. Just in terms of the consultation issues that were raised, I can't speak to the level of consultation within the organization, But certainly, as was mentioned, there was for a long period of time from the previous board a discussion of this public value conference that would take this new vision to the public. And so, yeah, I just want to, I think, you know, obviously as things have wound down instead of wound up on this strategy, a lot of these things haven't taken place that were very important to do so. I just wanted to take the opportunity of commenting on the concern about the migration of audiences and some of the points that have been made about the public mandate and the public value. I think it is a good idea that we actually just focus on the strategy now and not conflate the other issues, because there is a critical public interest process underway here that really relates to the long-term viability of the public broadcaster. I think that the issue of maintaining a public broadcaster in a competitive environment is an absolutely critical one, and being in the portfolio committee and people responsible for the legislation, and I'm sure with the observation of the regulator, I just want to emphasize again the importance of the public mandate not only being a funding issue, but creating a fair competitive environment for the public broadcaster. It's no, you know, throwing money at this problem will go a long way, but it's not going to solve the problem. We actually require, which we've long stood for in policy, a broadcasting ecology that spreads public broadcasting values and mandates across the broadcasting environment. It is no use, you know, nobody's going to want to fund a public broadcaster to the amount that we're asking for if we've actually ghettoized public audiences because we can't compete with other audiences. So we have to acknowledge that even if we're not revenue-based, we're still going to be competing for audience share. And that's going to mean that we need a very nuanced regulatory environment that allows us to compete fairly in prime time while taking account of special needs and interest groups on the edges of that. As I said, you know, I don't think any government's going to want to fund public broadcasting when, you know, I think in Brazil we're looking at about 1 or 2% of the audience share actually enjoys public broadcasting. So I just wanted to make that as a more general point. I also wanted to just speak about very briefly about the licensing and the capacity that does exist within the organization, whatever audits or other things find, and specifically the role of the public broadcaster as we go into the digital environment. I think if we look at broadcasting success stories and the failures that have then been rectified by success, for example, in the UK and Spain and various other environments, because where you have such a big public broadcaster with such a large share of the audience, it becomes absolutely central to the successful takeoff of DTT for all free-to-air providers, for all viewers. And I just wanted to say that there is, you know, there is extraordinary capacity in the SABC. And just by way of example, in relation to the point made about, you know, the deficit on licensing fees, and Gab's response to that in terms of the efficiency of that department, these are all incredible attributes and skills that exist in the SABC that can be leveraged in a digital environment. So I just wanted to respond to it because there was at some point in the last few days, and I know we're trying to keep the issue separate, a point was made that, you know, why are we trying to take on additional projects in a new environment when we should be looking at the core and something? And obviously, at the moment, funding the core is the issue. But the capacity that exists in the licensing department is exactly the kind of capacity that you need in a call center for a digital environment. So I just wanted to say, I think, yeah, it's important to understand where the skills base is, where the skills deficit is, and how that can be leveraged at a national and public interest level, while ensuring a fair competitive environment, because obviously, despite the competitive environment, you know, the SABC is the 100-pound gorilla on the block still. So I just thought I would just make some of those points while we have the portfolio committee's attention. But to say yes, it's basically this had been endorsed by two boards over a period of time.
Can we move on to Mr. Mbeki?
Chairperson, I would like to echo the sentiments of my colleague here, Professor, that indeed this strategy was formulated jointly with the previous board, and we did not adopt it, and we waited for the new board to be appointed. And fortunately, the two of us have institutional memory. It was adopted by the new board. And it's not entirely new strategy. It's a strategy which we came to present last year without going back to history, which an opportunity was not afforded to us. on the other point is that indeed what Advocate Wolf has made reference to, that we identified that there is a need to have a position of risk and strategy in the organization to carry out these responsibilities. And I can attest that one of those people who put the last nail on the coffin of Mr. Tole in the attempt to persuade him really to consider joining the organization. it's also true that each time that we were looking at the funding of SABC, and this is something which Mrs. Mampane has always made reference to, that it is very difficult to quantify the value which SABC actually brings to the public. And we then said that we cannot leave it at that point. We need to come up with a document that we can actually present to the shareholder, to the National Treasury, and also to this House. On annual basis, we have adopted something of having summits which are coordinated particularly by Mrs. Zimande's office. And last year's summit, which involved other broadcasters, was actually going to assist us in workshopping our public value document, which exists. Unfortunately, due to the turmoils that we've all been through last year, that summit did not take place. And we have not had the opportunity to rehash that document. But I think most of the issues, Chairperson, are going to come when we present the financials. I would like to conclude off by saying most of the aspects that are presenting some financial problems are a manifestation of the contradiction between our public funding model and our definition of public value. I'll reserve those comments and then I'll come up with them extensively on a line-by-line basis when we go to the financials in the interest of time. Thank you.
Members, can I just seek your guidance? Can we go on to the finances? Because Mr. Nicholson has got a family bereavement and he has to leave at 2:30.
Chair, I've managed to change my arrangement, so I'll stay until Parliament finishes. Parliament finishes the funeral tomorrow morning, sir.
Okay, fine. So we can go on to four then. Good. All right. Then can I take the next round of questions still on the strategy document? I recognize Mastori, Nsiki, Simkizi, and Vilma.
Thank you, Chair. I think I have to mention that I'm more confident to ask questions now after the cloud that has been brought in by the questions that were from our colleagues on the accusations made to the executive. Now that we have clarified that we'll be dealing with that separately, it gives me confidence to ask these questions. Some of the questions are related to each other, but I just wanted to know from the strategy deployment, when you talk about operating model, when do you think this will be implementable? And on the platform positioning, in your definition of SABC distribution objectives on all platforms, are you considering the area of uneducated and the rural citizens this also goes to the strategic ambitions beyond 2010. Have you selected priorities from all what you have put in front of us? And which areas are specifically for the population in the rural and the poor who cannot afford to pay for other TV channels? My last question is on the summary of findings, the bullet 5, on the citizens' respondents. I'm surprised that you have all the sectors that you mentioned. I don't know whether you had made your research to the indigenous people and on the women's rights also. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. After listening to the SABC executive, I think, Chair, it's not that bad. As I'm going through their strategy, you could see that men and women are really trying to make sure that the SABC is the entity that works for the citizens of this country. That's the new word from Mr. Todd. I'm very conscious. But Chairperson, having said that, my question is that on the strategy, they have talked about establishing a SABC academy. My question on that, have they consulted and maybe share the concept whether with the former minister or the new minister? So that when they continue with this concept, they also, because this is a new administration, Chairperson, so that the new leadership, they also contribute to the establishment of this SABC Academy. And contrary to that, Chairperson, because this is a proposal. And on the other hand, you have NEMISA, which NEMISA is also an institution that trains, you know, people in broadcasting and what will be the relationship with this a new SABC academy. That will be my question. Thanks, Chair.
I'm partly covered, but around the same issue of SABC academy, Mr. Stoller said they are busy developing the concept. And who's developing that concept? It's internal, or you've outsourced it maybe to a consultant or an external provider. But also, Chair, I'm very concerned with the statement under the contracting processes where they said they want to reduce the turnaround time to generate and sign contracts. My concern is the reasons why they want to reduce that turnaround time. Because to me is that they announce that certain program will be broadcast on this date, and they go out to advertisers and sort some advertisement and things like that before signing the contract. Because you end up
the date of the broadcast of the broadcasting of that certain program. It's coming while the contract is not there. So that's why they want to reduce that. But for me, I think that's a reason, because to me that's not the problem of the contract, of the signing of contract. That's the poor planning. But if the reason were to be maybe because of efficiency and things like that, I would be comfortable with this reducing the turnaround time. But the way Mr. Stolle put it, I think it's a little bit problematic. I think that's my concern.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. I want to inform the SABC, your picture that you created here, you all saw and you made it, made a dent to it, reflecting South Africa. I'm very sorry to say this does not reflect in South Africa. You left out a very large part of this community, a marginalized community. People with disabilities are not included in this picture. It's not reflecting here. And in this committee, when I was part here when we did the Broadcasting Amendment Act, I was part of this committee. We says that the SABC will see to make TV programs accessible for people who are deaf and people who are blind. But your presentation today, nowhere there's mention made with people with disabilities. And I'm not even looking at the targets that you've mentioned, because your presentation has not covered people with disabilities. And then linking to DSTV, I encourage the deaf people to look at DSTV, to do pay TV, because those movies, 80% of them are accessible for people who are deaf. And I encourage deaf people to get pay TV. And my remote, I can choose if I want to look subtitles or not. And DEFSA, as a Deaf Federation of South Africa, begged your news channels to make these news channels accessible. And it's not been done. So the SABC is going to digital migration and changing from analog to digital. I want to ask, with that digital, this is a wonderful initiative, but can our SABC program, all of them, will that be accessible to subtitles if we move into a digital migration? Well, I just came out of the elections. Wherever I go and talk in my constituency, they've always been asking me constantly the accessibility to television programs. The elections on the debate, the programs, when the ANC have won, that they have announced that they've won, when the president have addressed the nation, those programs were not accessible to the deaf community, which forms a large constituency of the voters. And the deaf people want to hear what the president wants to say. I have to ask and phone the SABC every time before there's a public address, please can we have interpreters on those channels? And it's not happening. And then 2010 is on its way. We have international people coming here. The deaf people have been already asking DEFSA, will your public broadcaster be subtitled? And sign language interpreters, will they be for the matches? African deaf people, that, because you're also broadcasting into the African countries, they are asking us, will our broadcaster be accessible? So, and it's not been accessible at this stage. Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity.
Any further questions on the strategy document? Can I just put a question also? Have you moderated or modified your strategic plan to take into account your current financial circumstances? I don't want a grand plan. It was developed 3 years ago. It looks very nice. I want to know, what's your plan for now? Has it been costed, and are we within budget? Didn't take your question also?
Chairperson, I also just wanted to know, could they also just tell us if in the course of the period over the 2 to 3 years that they were realizing that the mandate is going to result in shortfalls, etc., what other measures, apart from the strategic plan that they now presented, obviously they started implementing part of the plan, in order to save unnecessary expenditure, etc., what steps did they take to regularize all activities? Have the audit committee, have the risk assessment properly done, etc.? And did they take on board any of the audits, internal audits that they have conducted that revealed wastage, unnecessary expenditure, etc.? What measures did they take to stop all of those activities? We will take questions after this in the medical center.
Okay, Chairperson, I've been allocated to the questions relating to the SABC Academy because it's in my portfolio. other colleagues will deal with others. So just to say, Honourable Killian, it is a living strategy. I think SIPA will attest to that when he responds. Honourable Magazi and Honourable Mkhize, I'm delighted you've raised the questions around the Academy so that I could get an opportunity to fill in the gaps from the highlights you saw in the presentation. To begin with, it is a young, vibrant team of internal managers in our Learning and Development Department of Human Capital Services who are driving the process of consolidating the concept. We are working in partnership with NEMISA, with MEPSITA, as well as the higher education and institutions, and HISA in particular. In the last week, 2 weeks alone, we signed an MOU with NEMISA, because as we are busy consolidating the curriculum, we are aware of the fact that we can't wait. We're working in parallel with these other partners who are, for example, NEMISA in particular, AMEU is focusing on very specific skills around animation and so forth. But the Academy addresses two issues. One, developing and consolidating a skills pool internally at SABC for our traditional services, generic skills that we need that are unique as a public service broadcaster, but also those that are geared together to be at the cutting edge in the new converged and digital environment. But secondly, because we are a public service broadcaster and we are the biggest player, we're also looking at having a skill strategy that begins to inject the pool of skills in the country, because inadvertently people poach from us, but also we have a responsibility in terms of the ICT sector to contribute to that skills development. In respect of higher education institutions, for example, we have an MOU with HISA where we identify a diverse number of higher education institutions depending on their strategic strength in terms of whether they are stronger in journalism or in leadership or in either ICT policy issues and so forth. So it's designed to do both internal as well as make a contribution to developing the skills pool in our sector in the country as a whole. And yes, we are looking at aligning with the new priorities of the new administration in terms of heeding that call of contributing towards a developmental agenda and the trajectory of the country.
Chair, if I can make a quick addition to this. This is one of the issues that we have discussed collectively amongst ourselves and management, to say that what role could SABC contribute towards the development of broadcasting, because it's a highly specialized area. Number of academic institutions are offering certificates, degrees, diplomas,
But none of the graduates that could actually get out of those institutions could be immediately be put into a job and run with the functions immediately. And we looked at this as part of our corporate social investment in a three-tier approach. One is that as part of our SABC Foundation, we said that we need to make sure that we set aside a reasonable amount of funds to make sure that we sponsor some students and put them into a program where we can actually give them continuous exposure into broadcasting and from time to time bring them in so that they can get the flair exposure of what broadcasting is all about, sponsored by SABC, and that's the program underway. Secondly, we said that in terms of Mr. Mvuzo Bebe's section, where we actually invite bids from the public, and we said that it was not enough for us to continuously expect people to pitch for work for SABC. We then took a resolution to say that Mr. Mbebe's section must go out and run national workshops on almost and structure the pitching process on a two-tier basis, so that it happens twice a year. So these workshops that are running are part of this development of the broadcast in general. And the third one, we said, having done all this, but still, we have to accept the fact of the matter that SABC is used in most instances as a springboard, as a preparatory ground for people to actually jump. We said we are very happy as a public broadcaster to contribute to the sector, to the country, in terms of developing these skills. But when we look at the pool of these portfolios, be it academic institutions, be it our own inbuilt within our ministry, the NEMISA, there's still a gap. And hence then the notion of the academy came up. But we said that it must be done in conjunction and collaboration with all these partners so that it does not necessarily become a standalone. And part of actually bringing it here is part of selling this. It has not been executed yet. It's work in progress. We have actually presented it to the shareholder, and we should have actually presented this thing last year already, like I was saying that. So this is our commitment as part of our value contribution to the nation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll first read the contracting processes that Mr. Stolle was addressing. Primarily, the issue of why we need to revise our contracting processes is to ensure efficiency on one side, but also the issue of making sure that it's easy to do business with SABC. Because I think you must look at those turnaround things in both of them in the same light. So you have to attract efficiencies, because if most of your staff, you have got a lot of staff involved with the contracting process, you're being inefficient. Because all you're doing is that you've got more administrative heads, as distinct from making sure that you've got an efficient contracting system that is shorter and is flexible. Because you're in a media environment, you need to respond to things today. You can't be in a pipeline that is involved over a long period of time. So that's one aspect. So it's talking about if you went into many media companies, they would have standard terms of trade. You walk in there and say, I want to buy X, they'll say, here's the terms of trade. Or you want to commission something, here's the terms of trade. So that the other contracts become what you might call must-start, they become minimal. They are not the norm. But on an average, in a year, we commission close to 1,000 products just on local work. Forget sport, forget international. So it's about issuing close to 5 contracts per day. Now you can't, unless you're going to build a bureaucracy, you can't expect that all these contracts must always be originated and done. So it's that one. But secondly, because SABC has strived and has said we're going to develop the industry, you are dealing with small producers out there. You need to make sure that your contracting process is also friendly to them. It must make sure that it's easy to do business with. It's not a question that you are, as if you're negotiating with another big company that has got lawyers and advocates that can look at your contract and try and juxtapose the two. So we need to deal with those things as part and parcel of creating that efficiency, because otherwise it becomes also inefficient when your suppliers take a long time because they must go to their lawyers and they must peruse the same contract, and 3 months later they respond to that issue. So I think that that is the main drive. Of course, there is the issue that we need to make sure that that contracting process fits in with the planning process of the SABC. So I think that's the reasoning behind our contracting process. Second, I think that it also deals with the SABC that is now living in a particular world, in a particular environment, not an SABC that exists, that in the past it was the dominant and only player. When you are dominant and the only player, you behave in a particular way. When you are in a particular environment, it depends in a particular way. I always cite this example. 20 years ago, you walked into a FIFA, you determined the terms of trade. You would say, I will draft the contract myself, I will give you a FIFA the contract. Nowadays, it's the reverse. They tell you, here is the contract. You don't have an option but to sign it. So now, if you have got systems that say, you can't sign that contract until you've done A, B, C, D, E, F, you are putting the organization at risk, one, but two, then the contracting process becomes long because your lawyers then respond to FIFA lawyers, and 6 months down the line, the contract is not signed. So I'm citing that as a simple thing, and you've got a competition on the side that is prepared to sign the contract tomorrow. So it's dealing with also those inefficiencies that you're dealing with, that you're living in an international environment. So I think that it must be reviewed in that light. I think the comment raised around the issues of DEF and DEFSA, I think they're fair. I would one person, because I'm in the content, it's my responsibility to say that the comments raised are fair. And we've done quite a lot over the last 4 years to try and address this particular issue, from making sure that almost all our soapies and dramas are subtitled. If you looked at the SABC 4 years ago, you hardly saw subtitling. Now we're talking about almost all dramas and soapies are subtitled. In fact, one of the things we're trying to do now is to make sure that not only because they're only subtitled in English, we now want to move to the step further and say, how can we subtitle them in the various languages? Of course, there's a challenge in an analog environment that you can't put all subtitles in the various languages so the screen will be full. You won't see what's in there. But once we move into a digital space, hopefully one can be able to create subtitles in the various languages, and then you give the viewer sort of the option to choose which subtitle they want to use. So we are looking into that. The second thing is that we deliberately, from a content perspective, adopted a principle of, as part of our strategy, that we will not do things without, nothing about us without us. We are moving very well on that area to try and make sure that we can deal with this issue. And I'm sure at a future date, I always say to Sumele, I can be proud that we lead in that area in terms of employment. But also not just in terms of employment, we have now gone to producers that produce for the SABC, and we have said we want to start to see people with disabilities being part and parcel of those productions. I think if you remember in the olden days, they would take any person and make them a blind person. We're now starting to insist that if in the script there's going to be a character who's blind or a character that is deaf, that person must be blind and that person must be deaf. Don't go and create those type of situations. So we're looking into that. But I think the intervention is very important in that the solution to it, and I think the Honorable Member actually identified it properly, the solution is in the implementation of DDT, because it is a digital environment that can allow you to do more things to enable content on screen. Insofar as that is concerned, our planning is that already we have looked into the issue of making sure that we do produce two types of decoders. A decoder that is friendly to people with disabilities, both in terms of the typeface, the remote control, and all those issues. We've asked them to give us the specs for it. We hope that before the launch, in the next 2 to 3 months, we can pilot that type of digital decoder with the assistance of DEFSA and various institutions to see whether it meets those requirements. Secondly, we are now piloting audio description, because that ultimately is really the final solution, where you can have simultaneous audio description. As a person speaks, you can actually see it on screen, as distinct from subtitling, because then that allows you to do live commentary, state of the nation address, and not just rely on sign language. You can actually have, as the president speaks, you can see it coming out in the screen simultaneously at the same time. That would be the ideal situation that hopefully we're going to get into, unlike now where we're going into a delayed environment. And that solution hopefully is going to help us with that. So I'm busy testing and piloting that this now. So hopefully by the time we launch DDT, all the description is going to be part and parcel of our solution. So I think that I would want to put in there. Already, for example, in Mubango, we do have a character that is actually deaf as part and parcel of this one. But I think that, to me, the importance of it is that the digital environment, because the correctness about it is that she had said that the multi-choice are able to do this for people with disability because they've got a decoder that is digital and is enabled. It's going to be critical that as the specs are issued out on the decoder for DDT, that decoder has got those specifications and is enabled to do that. And one is hopeful, and at the SAPC, we're not going to shy away from driving that particular process. But we can give more details to the committee about the work we're actually doing around audio description and simultaneous translation. Thank you.
Just ask a question as a follow-up on that. You see, I don't think anybody can oppose the principle of efficiency in procurement of tenders or contracting, etc. But how do we ensure integrity? Because sometimes in the interest of efficiency, you take shortcuts that actually open the gap for irregular practices to take hold. Now, I'd like to hear the board on this matter. Because we don't want to go into the specific allegations that have been made, but that seems to be one of the core problems that we are trying to grapple with. Now, you're saying that you are changing organization, it's more competitive, we need to look at the processes because they're too time-consuming, and but what do we do about the law? There are standard practices that have been set out, National Treasury demands, and how do we ensure integrity? I'd like to hear the board on that.
Honourable members, I think we are, this board has been particularly seized by reports about inefficiencies and lack of integrity or unethical behaviour leveled at different levels of the organisation. I wanted to try and present the idea that, in fact, implementing these efficiencies very often deals with some of the lack of controls and therefore the opportunity for people to act corruptly or procedurally. The institution of the SAP system and the enterprise system will not only speed up the contracting process so that smaller people can be paid, etc., but it also means that if the contracting process has not been gone through all the steps, if it's not been properly implemented, that there will not be payment. So in the past, we have had often lots of contracts that were actually, people had already begun work, and the contracts were still working their way through the SABC system. That can no longer happen. With the new system, you simply cannot get, you cannot get permission to move ahead on work, you cannot get payment until those contracts are in place. And the idea has been obviously setting up the system was, there was a lot of troubleshooting that was required in order to get it up and running, which caused a lot of frustration with people who were not having their contacts or being given go-aheads because things weren't in place. But that process, as I understand it, and I'm sure Robin can speak, because we can speak this more closely, will actually to reduce that time. So I just wanted to say on the issue of the contracting, there are considerable controls in place. The other side of that, of course, is that the tightening up of the systems does mean that for very large contracts which come up from time to time, if you stick to the system, you don't have this kind of flexibility. But with those kinds of contracts, generally what happens is that management would seek a mandate from the board to negotiate to a certain point. Now, obviously, the problem arises where in a negotiation you get to that point and you've got a competitor sitting on your back. But usually that can be managed. But as I said, one can't work within the usual system if one's negotiating those very big competitive contracts. I just wanted to say a couple of more things in relation to the questions and points that were made. And I absolutely feel duty-bound to say this in the absence of Fadila Lakhadin, one of the board members, who have resigned. I mean, I think we have to accept as the SABC that we have been woefully, not paid sufficient attention to the issue of the disabled. It's not only in relation to the content. I think Mbuzo has accepted that we have not performed optimally at that level at all. But that there is a lot of opportunity for improvement with the digital broadcasting on the content side. The problem is that we've got the rhetoric on this right for a long time, but we're not actually seeing through the implementation. And as I say, it relates not only to the content, but to the actual accessibility of our own institutions and various other impediments to the equal participation of disabled people. And I think that's something we have to apologize for as the SABC and recommit ourselves to, as I said, particularly in this new digital environment. Just in relation to the question of what was done to modify the strategic plan in the light of the financial shortfalls that we saw, I did mention that the plan obviously was developed at a time when we did have considerable surpluses, but it was already clear some time back that those were increasingly eroded, and of course as it became clear of the economic situation that our revenues would not meet the projections that we'd hoped. As I mentioned, part of the very painful process of getting this plan implemented with the current constraints was the two strategies the two dimensions of the strategy and the budget. So what it proposes is both an austerity plan on the one hand and a growth of revenue on the other. And both of those were not coming into fruition as we had hoped. So we weren't seeing the gains we would like to have seen on the austerity plan. And as far as the revenue generation went, it was highly dependent on the implementation of a set of strategic projects. And as we pointed out, this is again the dilemma of putting money towards something in order to get the gains. At the point we'd reached now, management can speak more in the detail of this, we actually hadn't seen the implementation or the benefits yet of certain strategic projects that we would have had to spend on, but in order to get those gains. And that was some of the sort of tussle between the board and the management was to say, how do we get that austerity plan to work? How do we get those revenues? And as I said, that's really what took us to some of the discussions of the last few days. Just in relation, and I did mention this, we have mentioned this previously, but the question keeps coming up, is that, as I said, the board was very concerned by accusations internally, externally, that were levelled at different parts of the organisation. Together with management, a number of governance processes were set in place. The management had worked on the development of a risk strategy. I mentioned that before. And the risk committee of the board has sought to not only quantify that strategy, make sure that it's a dashboard on the board at all times, but to extend the scope of the risk strategy to incorporate management and board and not just be looking at the operational sort of aspects of the organization. And that was work that was underway. It's still ongoing. And the other side of it, as I mentioned, was the audit committee. And I think Robin Nicholson mentioned it the last time that it's been implemented with such rigor that it's potentially damaging to the organization. There's been so many ongoing investigations that it's actually debilitated the morale in the organization. But just to say, that's not to say that there haven't been significant breaches of individuals that have been picked up and dealt with. Some of them are in criminal process, some of them are internal disciplinary procedures, etc. I think these are the nature of very large organizations with developing systems, etc. But certainly both the audit and risk committee and the management and the board have been very active in these areas.
Jensen, I think this is one area where no matter how diplomatic or strategic we can try to be, it's going to haunt us. There have been tendencies whereby contracts or service providers have managed to do some work for SABC and got paid without contracts, without service level agreements. There have been reasons given, but there is no amount of explanation that could get us out of the hook to say that was an unlawful exercise. And it has contributed immensely in terms of the organization getting qualified audit reports. There have been instances where, from the side of the board, we would find an organization having been committed and in a contract which we cannot pull out at all because certain payments have been committed and they're actually being occurring, and the only thing that we will have to do in those instances as a board is to find value out of that contract, say what can SABC benefit out of that, because it has, the organization has already been committed unlawfully so. And this is one of the bad tendencies and practices which the organization has actually had. As a, in an attempt to try and address this, it's one of the three processes. One was that of putting a procurement policy in place, and in line with Mr. Mbebe's frustrations, fortunately, the two of us here have been dealing with both these things, procurement and risk. We then broke down the levels of delegation of authority to make sure that there is the process of approval does not get frustrated. And when it comes to the bids, we have certain levels of approvals, bid evaluation, bid adjudication that could approve up to 7.5 million, and the group EXCO up to 15 million. But like Mr. Tole said, once it says 15.1, then they're stuck. But this is one of the proactive initiatives which we have taken up as a board to try and rectify the situation. Secondly, is the issue of clusters, which Advocate Mbovu spoke about. We picked up that there are three divisions that are very critical, but four in the organization. One is audit, two is the legal division, three is the procurement division, four is the office of the common secretariat. We then said, let's put these together into a cluster we should call governance to make sure that we do not, in our attempt to try and comply with the provisions of the law, frustrate the business processes of the organization. Under his stewardship, Advocate Bob even made a request to the board to say, maybe the board should consider to have a business development committee that could see the interfacing of approvals between certain intervals. There was no such a provision that we could, but what I did on my side was to make a commitment to say, if there are anything that warrant approvals as chair of procurement, I would make myself available and I will call upon board members to make sure that we do round-robin approvals in between board meetings as a proactive initiative. The third aspect was this one of putting systems to make sure that this thing does not continue, because it's been very cancerous. You're right, Chairperson, to say some in some instances it will happen genuinely, to a point where, as part of the procurement policy, I've made a request to my colleagues to say, we need to give some exception, particularly on the live activities, that is sport and news, because you cannot always expect somebody who is responsible for sport when there is a need of a special service elsewhere to call upon the organization to source a supplier. But we said as soon as those suppliers have been commissioned, they must get into the database, which brings me to another point to say, for us to avert some of these tendencies is to make sure that all companies that are doing business with SABC are registered in our database. Also, when it comes to the news, they will also have perhaps there's coverage of elections or a rally, a funeral, to make sure that they are able to source suppliers, but those should be followed up immediately by making sure that those suppliers get into the database. So we have been able to make some of these flexibilities, but within the provisions of the procurement policy. But we are quite confident, Chairperson, now to say that there's a lot of backlog that we have to deal with. And there's a lot of accountability and explanation that is yet to be given in terms of that backlog. But now going forward, we even said that the audit committee, sorry, the internal audit and a legal division, they must take proactive initiative to give support to all the departments where it's needed so that we do not play the policing role internally. In the organization, but with the assistance of the system now that is that is in place, no company going forward will be paid if the contract and service level agreements have not been concluded. But there is still a lot that we have to answer for in terms of the past practices. Thank you.
Can I just ask one more question on this? As I understand it, the new policy now is in place and is operational. We can get a copy of the policy document. Okay. Two, the specific investigations that were conducted and where irregularities were found, are disciplinary measures being instituted? Can we get a report on that, on specific cases, where they are and whether they've been concluded and what action has been taken? Can we get a report on that? The third report we want is all the outstanding cases, this backlog that you're talking about. Can we get a schedule of areas that still warrant further investigation so that we can come back later on to the audit committee or whoever it is, or the legal people, and say, look, can you give us a progress report on that? So we need three things. I don't know if the committee is in agreement with me. One, the policy statement and whether it's being properly implemented. Yes, and who is involved in it? I want the names of the people who are overseeing the implementation of the policy, both at an operational level and at a board level. Okay, now there might be a new board, but at least who was involved previously. Okay. Two is the investigations that were concluded and the findings and what actions were taken. And three, a schedule of outstanding cases or pending cases so that we could track those.
Chair, there's one thing that also I need to get. I think Professor said this tendency is no longer happening now because of the system that is there. So they've managed to control it. Can we get a specific since when they've managed to cap it? Or maybe it's April, or maybe it's June, maybe, because we need also to know when we get the financial report, this thing is no longer continuing, it's no longer happening, as Professor has mentioned it.
Thank you, Chair. Very quickly, Chair, I just wanted to just, because I think the gist of your question was acknowledging the problems of the past and that have been identified and acknowledged. What is the what hat can the committee take going forward? I just wanted to say this. The, you know, this is a very difficult area to deal with. And our approach was this. You have to put systems in place, and then you must implement them progressively. Because I'll just give you an example. When I got there in 2005, just a few clear observations, which have been spoken about. I said, because I was coming from a listed company, so I was horrified to hear that there's actually no risk committee of the board, let alone the management at that stage. There was no procurement committee. And these things, and this is an example of where things worked, I think, between the board and management. Because once these things were identified, immediately the board put those committees are relatively probably the newest committees of the board, having been established in the past 2 or 3 years. Because you can't run a ₹5 billion company without a procurement committee or a risk assessment committee. And so that was done. Mr. Toilo was employed on the management side, and the risk committee and the procurement committee on the board side were established. Now, obviously, that's not going to catch thieves. But you start with creating that framework. What we then did in the implementation strategy was to establish what Mr. Mbeki calls the governance cluster. It's nicknamed RSG, Risk, Strategy, and Government, and Governance. Now, what that does is to say, because there's this myth that governance is just something about the board, you know, whereas governance actually should be the job of every employee. So what we did was, if you look at anybody, you can go to anybody at the SABC now and say, show me your performance contract. You'll find that performance contract, as of the past 2.5 years, is structured according to the cluster. So it will say, it doesn't matter whether you're the CEO or whatever. It will say, what are you doing in the area of operations? What are you doing in the area of people? What are you doing in the area of governance? So even the lowest employees must now understand that, because if let's say the PFMA says such and such a thing must be done within 30 days, once that thing is not done, of course the SABC has to account. But it might be that somebody who was sitting and twiddling their thumbs at 20 levels down and so that thing does not happen. So that everybody, literally every employee, has got to account when it's time to assess their performance on these issues of governance. And that was a major revolutionary change for people to understand that governance is not just something for those people up there who have meetings and who read the PFMA, but it's part and parcel of what you do on a daily basis. Now, once again, these are structures, but we think that the results and the benefits from these kinds of interventions are going to start showing up, because people will no longer just shirk their responsibilities. Now, this RSG cluster is crucial in the following sense, as Andile Mbeki said. You put together for the first time in one room, once a month, the head of the legal department, the head of the of internal audit, the head of the company secretary, and the strategy person and risk person, to say every month, what are we more, are we winning, are we losing in terms of the implementation of the governance of the organization as such. And that obviously includes these issues of the issues that you raised. If there's an annual report that says, let's say 2006-07 annual report, the external auditors are going to say, we are concerned about these 10 areas. For example, cases are not being followed up, or people are not being prosecuted, blah, 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 blah. The sole job of that cluster is to make sure that once that external audit report is received, the following year, you know, the mantra of that cluster is to say, the following year, maybe the external auditors must complain about something else, but you can't have these recurring same things. Otherwise, somebody must lose their bonus, or somebody must lose their job, or whatever, because now it's all part of their performance indicators.
I'm just looking at lunchtime. Can we hold those questions so that we complete this round, and then we will come back to them? Yeah, that's what I'm... So if we can do it in the next few minutes, because I want to adjourn for lunch.
No, look, Chef. Some of us, we accept the response and the last input by advocate, both. I think, Chair, we're not operating under the normal circumstances. That's what you need to understand in relation to the required information which you have requested. Now, Chair, I'm raising that, Chair, because all over the media there is a perception which has been put into the public that in the SABC they are looting. There are people who are busy looting the resources of the SABC, financial and otherwise. Now, Chair, these normal processes will deal with them normal under normal conditions where we go through the annual report and other things. But I'm just saying, emphasizing, Chair, that it's important to get the information you're talking about. Remember, Chair, you've got allegations here from the union. You've got allegations made by board members about the activities of executive management, the SABC, where they enrich themselves, allegedly enriching themselves and other things. So it's critical to get this internal investigation report and all this necessary information which will assist us in making sure that, as we have said, Chair, that we are not attempting to sweep anything under the carpet. Everything we'll do, it should be in the open so that those men and women in the SABC were not involved in any acts of misconduct or otherwise. They are cleared so that they are able to do their work on a daily basis as they're supposed to. But I'm just saying, Chair, the other normal process of annual report and so on, no, we'll come to that. Under normal circumstances, but now we're dealing with a matter of national interest where we're told that each and every day there's looting. We might later find nothing available if it's true that people are looting in the SABC. So we want to deal with the looting part, Chair, as a matter of urgency so that we stop the looting, so that we start in a correct footing in the SABC. Thanks, Chair.
Very quickly, sir.
Thank you very much. No. You want to get something in, all right?
I'm sitting here thinking, and sorry I had to leave for a couple of minutes early to take medication. I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, why did we not pick up all of these things earlier? Were they not reported to Parliament, or were they kept away from Parliament? Because I agreed with what you are requesting in terms of the report, but we also have to, in terms of our oversight duties, as members of Parliament, to prevent this in future. If it was not reported in the past, the question is why, and why is it only picked up now?
Killian, I see all the hands. All right, I love the members.
Chairperson,
you don't want to go for lunch, it's fine.
just briefly, and I would like to follow on what Honourable Dalila said. I absolutely concur, and that was for that specific reason why I asked on several occasions that we actually be supplied with the Auditor General reports of the previous 2 to 3 years. Because what we need to establish as part of our oversight was weaknesses in financial management that were exposed, and non-compliance with the PFMA would actually have helped a lot to bring this in the open much earlier. My concern is there are various allegations of conflicting senior management, and we need to know. In terms of the PFMA, they need to make a declaration of businesses that would be similar to where they are involved. I don't want to sound like a legal authority, but fiduciary, it's part of Section 50 of the PFMA, which is calling about fiduciary duties of accounting authorities. So that is one of the duties. Secondly, there are also elements in the PFMA where individual members of a board could actually come forward and disclose to the accounting authority issues that they feel should be further investigated, etc., matters of financial irregularity. We need to know, was any of that done and what steps were taken, and that would bring us to what you have requested, because we need to see that steps are actually taken against individuals, because in the end, it is the integrity of the whole institution that is currently at stake. Whereas if the authority took real action against individuals who were perpetrating unacceptable sort of activities, then it could have really saved the image of the South African public broadcaster. Thank you.
Just on a point of clarity, Chair, because I'm now really actually getting frustrated and confused. There is still 5 questions that we have not answered. I don't know which question we must answer. If you put a question to us, put the question. Let's answer the question. Because we have got 5 questions that we haven't answered. And now I'm not sure what are we addressing. If we're going to deal with corruption, let's put it out. Let's just say, this is what you have. Let's answer it. Me, I'm ready. We can answer any question right now. But are we now, do we stop answering these questions and move to the next question? What are we doing? I'm not sure. I'm really frustrated now.
Yeah, no, you will be given time to answer those questions. I know I've been a bit generous with the members, but they want to get their say in. Can I suggest that we adjourn for lunch? We will get, when we come back, we will get the answers to these questions and any other comments from the board and from the management, and any further questions that members might have. Today we are going to spend time here going through it item by item. Yes, that we are going to do. So even if we have to have a late night session, we are going to work today. Yes. And this committee is noted for midnight session. The truth emerges in the darkness of the night, not in the light of day. That's a gentle lunch. We come back at 2 o'clock.